and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you? How's the week?
The week has been not too bad. I have been vindicated.
Vindicated?
Yes.
In what sense have you been vindicated?
Well, you remember last week I was the victim of a horrendous crime.
Well, let's not over-egg the pudding. Somebody nicks some nectar points from you. It's not the crime of the century, is it?
Hang on a minute. If I had approached you in the street at knife point and demanded yes. £93 out of your wallet, you would consider yourself a victim of crime.
The money seems to have gone up from last week. This is one of those stories over the weeks. This is getting like by next year we go, do you remember that time, Trev, when I was held up at knife point and stolen of £1,000?
Now, just because it happened digitally, I don't think removes my victimness or victimhood.
Victimhoodness. Okay, no, I should put my sympathetic voice on.
You should try, at least.
All right. Oh, yes, Ben, I do remember how you were a victim of a most heinous crime, almost up there with a sort of Jack the Ripper type event. I'd imagine one day there'll be a waxwork of you in some museum somewhere the day Ben Harmer was ripped off of £93 of nectar. But no, I'm being sympathetic. So, yeah, anyway, last week, yes, you were a victim of crime.
I was, and I have been in touch with the good people at Nectar. And thankfully, they have very swiftly resolved things. I have nothing but good news and good praise for the people of the Nectar company.
Wow. I mean, did they have they refunded you? Are you all set up now? Can you go and buy all your Christmas goodies for free, basically?
Well, not for free. I had to spend a lot of money to earn that £93. Thank you. But yes, they have refunded me. They will send me a brand new Nectar card because the old number is obviously now useless because some thief has worked out my number. So they'll send me a new card. I've got my points back. I've got my money back. It's all's well that ends well. Some cretin from Birmingham, apparently, has enjoyed about 80 quid of my points and walked out of a store with 80 quid of Sainsbury's goods.
Right.
I have been refunded. So the thief has got a belly full of food. They've got their Christmas shopping done. I've got my money back. So only Sainsbury's is the loser here.
Well, all's well that ends well. The spirit of Christmas is truly alive in East Grinstead.
Not only that, I spoke to a member of staff and she said that the exact same thing had happened to her.
Wow.
And she'd had, it was someone in Scotland. It's something about the northern areas of the country, the Midlands and the North. They seem to be going for our nectar points. So watch out, Southerners.
It's a sweeping generalisation. Then you've got two instances of this and you've suddenly come to some sort of, I mean, I don't think you'd make a good detective making those sort of swift judgments.
Well,
on very little evidence.
Well, I mean, there's two cases, proven cases, and they're from the North.
Wow.
I mean, I know that the Birmingham is famously called the Midlands, so maybe not the North, but it's up, isn't it?
Well, yes, in relation to where we are.
We are.
Yes. Oh, well, I'm happy it's all been resolved. Boy,
but the woman in Sainsbury's told me that she'd been done, and you thought I was outraged, she was done for 440 quid's worth of Nectar points.
Wow.
Now, at what point do the police need to step in? Because as we established in the last podcast, you said this is the perfect crime because the police won't give a flying fuck, correct? And nothing's going to be done about it. They're not going to bother investigating. But at what financial point do they start saying, 440, that's a lot, we need to look into that?
I don't know. I mean, that seems enough to bring on a police investigation.
Yeah, but there's this weird grey line, isn't there? It's not like when the Hatton Garden jewellery heist happened, they said, oh, well, there's no point looking into this because it's only a few quid. No!
That was a few million, though, wasn't it? And it wasn't nectar points, it was gold.
Crime is crime, theft is theft. I've been wronged, people need to be investigated and locked up.
Have you tried reporting it to the police? Because I'd quite like to be party to that conversation, because obviously they can't say we're not going to do anything. But I'd like to hear what they would say in relation to this. You phoned up the police.
I mean,
if you phoned 999 and said, look, I've been relieved of some nectar points. I need attention immediately. I'd imagine they say, "Would you please get off the line, sir?"
No, this is a 101 incident. This is not a 999. But I mean, if you really want me to stretch this out for a part three of this conversation next week,
I don't think we do.
I can phone the police if you want me to.
I don't think we need a part three. I think we've got a resolution. It may not be the perfect resolution in terms of, because essentially crime has paid in this situation somewhere along the line. So it's not the perfect resolution, but I think at least for you, it's a resolution. For our listeners, thank Christ, for our listeners are thinking it's a resolution. Yeah, we don't need to go there again. I think it's all a good thing.
I think this is an outrageous overlook of my grief as a victim of crime. You should be raging. You should be looking for blood. On my behalf.
I mean, obviously, it's infuriating, and if it had happened to me, I would be livid. I'd probably go to Birmingham myself. I'd probably turn detective. I'd go to Birmingham. I'd go to every Sainsbury's, get all the CCTV, work it all out from there. If it meant spending the rest of my living days finding out who done it. You know, you said that the other week, we were talking about those mysteries you want resolved. Maybe that could be yours when the time comes. Can you just reveal to me who did that? And then the face of the so far anonymous criminal will appear before you.
Yeah, the guy I spoke to on the phone had identified it was... Well, he said it was Birmingham. I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but he had a bit of an accent. And I think he...
I mean, it sounds like you're being a bit rude when you said an accent. Was it a Brummie accent?
It was. I didn't get through to the thief when I phoned up Nectar.
Could be an inside job, that's all I'm saying.
But I thought, and I asked him to repeat it because I say a bit of an accent problem. I thought he said Castleford, which I've looked up because my geography, as you know, is famously terrible.
Yeah.
And that seems a good 2 hours north of Birmingham. I'm not sure if that's interesting or not, but it does go to re-establish the problem is the north. The higher up we go, and obviously Scotland's much higher than Birmingham. I know that much.
Oh, it must be rife up there, isn't it?
Well, the monetary gain was much higher. It was almost 4 or 5 times as high, 440 quid in Scotland. So the northern we go, the deeper the crime, I'm afraid.
Oh, imagine if you get over to like Scandinavia when you get back, you get to the North Pole. It's Father Christmas. He's
on the take.
Basically, all the gifts come from all the nectar points he's nicked over the years. He's like the king of the nectar points crime.
God, wouldn't that be the scam of the century if we uncovered that Santa Claus was the nectar points kingpin? He's like the Heisenberg of nectar points.
Talking of Father Christmas, right?
Yes.
Just again, and I like to always say this, I know children shouldn't be listening to this, but if you have got children earshot, might be a good time to take them away from this, because we're going to be talking about Father Christmas.
I think that's very delicately done. Well done, Trev.
When did you find out that Father Christmas wasn't real?
I genuinely have an answer for this. It was one Christmas where I desperately wanted a Nintendo 64.
Right.
And it was probably the birth of my love of video games. I'd been to a friend's house. He had one of these magical devices called the Nintendo 64. I played Mario 64 for the first time in my life, GoldenEye, James Bond game, and I was in love. And I wanted this machine so much. And my mum, bless her, was sort of delicately doing the dance with me about, oh, well, maybe Santa will bring you one this Christmas. Maybe this year you'll get one of these. And I got into such a tizzy, such a panicky fit that Father Christmas might not bring me this thing, that I was incessantly nagging her. Well, are you sure you've told him? Do you know? Is it coming? Because I need this thing. To the point where she said, Ben, do you really want me to tell you if you're getting a Nintendo 64 for Christmas? And I said, of course, I need to know if Santa's got the memo. And she said, yes, you're getting one. I've bought it. It's under the tree. Shut up.
Right. But did that dispel the myth of Santa then?
I think at that point, I realised that possibly, mum and dad were behind the guise of Santa Claus. However, I didn't care because I was so thrilled at the news I was definitely getting a Nintendo 64.
And how old were you, roughly, did you say?
Well, I think it was about 1996, the Nintendo 64, maybe a bit earlier. So I'd have been about 8 or 9.
8 or 9.
Probably a bit too old, I think, actually.
Well, I don't know, sure. I think that's around the age where the doubts start to settle in the minds of children, I think. Because when I've done the Father Christmas at schools, I think you go into years 1, 2, and 3, they're pretty much all in. You might get the odd child that is aware, right? But they're all in with the myth. Once you start getting to about year 4, that's when the doubts are really there. So year 4 is about that age, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, I think I remember primary school being at year 6 and you were about 11 years old. So I might have been a late developer.
Well, no, because year 4, you'd be about 8, wouldn't you? 8, 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's about the age. By year 5 and 6, I think it's not necessarily that they know. I still think there's still that element of doubt at that age. Because I think for me, I think I was about 10. But I still think at year 6, there's still enough children that would still believe in the magic of Father Christmas, right?
And I would like to just quickly say, I do think there is something important to be said for the preservation of your own child's dignity. And if your child has got to a certain age, and it isn't for me to say when, I have an idea in my own head, but I do think if your child is still, let's say, 13,
yeah,
going to school, believing in Father Christmas, you're going to need to fill them in on possibly the unpopular truth before they get the piss ripped out of them by their classmates.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think probably once you're at secondary school, you know, that first Christmas of secondary school might be your last one if you still believe, right? That's where I think the end should be, if you know that before. But I don't think it's up to anyone else, really, to do that job apart from the parents. I mean, if you reach a certain age, your friends are going to tell you if they know, right? And then it's up to you whether you believe them or your parents still. That's the sort of weighing up you have to do in your child's mind. But I don't think it's anyone's job to do it. And there was a thing this week where a vicar was invited into a school to talk to the children about Christmas. And this was year 6, so they are sort of 10 and 11. But the vicar took it upon himself to tell them quite outright that Santa doesn't exist.
Oh, no!
Shouldn't believe in Father Christmas. He said, you're all year 6 now, be real, Santa isn't real, it doesn't exist. And I just think, that's not your job, mate. I mean, considering you spend your whole life talking about another myth, I'm not sure you should be going in and dispelling another one. Because what if I came in and said, well, by the way, God's not real. I think we all need to get real about that. He'd be having a fucking fit, wouldn't he? Taking his dog collar off, going, come on, come outside. I'd quite like to have a fight with a vicar dressed as Father Christmas. I think that would bring an audience.
What an image. I mean, that would be the greatest news story of the year if some paparazzi took a picture of Father Christmas fighting a vicar.
I think...
That would get the Pulitzer Prize. Like,
which myth would win?
I think Santa would have the weight advantage over your average vicar.
I think Santa would also have advantage over the nicest in the myth. You know, I mean, there's not all the bigotry and all the other nasty stuff, you know, involved in the story of Santa, is there? Like, you know, you go into religion and there's all the nastiness around it. There's all the bigotry. There's all of that. But with Santa, it's just all nice, isn't it? So which myth would you rather have?
I'd take Santa over a vicar any day.
Yeah,
that's right. A weird sentence, isn't it?
So I think that was a wrong thing to do. I think that's a crime against Christmas.
So was he called out? Was he questioned? Has he been defrocked?
No. A formal complaint has been lodged by some parents. The school have launched an initiative to try and restore the festive spirit.
No, you can't put the genie back in the bottle, I'm afraid.
They've been giving out Believe badges.
Bless.
I mean, it's a nice thing, but again, it's too late now. And I hope that the Believe badge has got Father Christmas on and not any other religious iconography. I hope we're not getting confused there. What are you believing in? Yeah. I mean, keeping on the crime theme.
As we should.
I came across an article this week, and I love articles like this. This was an article about things that used to be illegal. These everyday things that people do now that at one time or another used to be illegal.
I wonder how many of them we both do.
Okay, well, this is more for women, I think, rather than men, to be honest. So I doubt we've done this, but who knows? Wearing a swimsuit.
What, full stop? Sorry, I thought there was going to be a caveat or a clause on the end of that. Just wearing a bathing suit.
Yeah, well, these were... I mean, back in the day, have you ever seen the pictures of, like, Victorian swimsuits where they're all really long, really that heavy woolen material? Basically,
yeah.
To cover...
So that you'd sink. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But, to, you know, to cover all modesty. You know, it was there to... Basically, very little skin on show. Right.
So is it a modesty law? Like no two pieces, no sort of nice, I say nice, I sound like a pervert now, bikini things going on?
No, this is before the bikini, really. This was when the one-piece swimsuit came in. So, you know, the swimsuit that still exists now, the one-piece, right?
The one-piece is inappropriate.
Well, it was back in 1919. Right, and I love this because this was... It basically sent the moral guardians of New York into a tailspin, right? And they hired what were called nagging ladies to patrol the public beaches.
Is there any other kind? Am I right?
Jeez. Right, so you've had to go at northerners and women today. I mean, we're really playing offence bingo, aren't we? I've done the religious side. I've offended the Christians. Let's see how far we can go.
Let's throw in a bit of racism next. Let's do that.
I'll leave that one to you, mate. So they hired 20 nagging ladies to patrol the public beaches who would then measure women's swimsuits and then slap fines on those who were wearing what were deemed offensively indecent swimsuits. Basically, anything that left the arms bare.
The arms? Mm. What is hypersexual about the arms?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, in the old days, like in Victorian times... Just a bit of ankle was deemed to be inappropriate, wasn't it? I mean, they even used to cover the legs of pianos. I mean, that's how... I mean, that's how sort of, you know, oppressed and suppressed the men were, that any kind of leg was enough to send them into a spin. So any kind of flesh, I'd imagine, was just way too dangerous. It would send the world into some sort of moral decline.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay, so one-piece bathing suits had to be measured. Well, I don't fall foul of that one. I only ever get into my swimwear when I'm about to dunk myself into a jacuzzi.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Because I'm a man of leisure, you know. So I don't often fall foul of that.
Okay.
But also, I imagine no one wants to see that either. So
no,
fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another one. Walking at night.
Define night, because in the UK at the moment, it's nighttime, it's pitch black at 4 o'clock.
I mean, I'm imagining it means sunset, after sunset. This was in Japan. Yeah, we're talking hundreds of years ago, this was.
Okay.
And the idea was that you'd have to have strict curfews, so you wouldn't have anyone out at night except for the law-enforcing samurai who are able to patrol the streets after dark. Or if you had a special pass from the government.
But does it explain why? Or
yes.
Does... Oh, good.
It was to prevent the peasantry from getting together at night to plot rebellion against the government.
Because they only plot at night. They can't possibly plot during the day.
And obviously they thought that because you can't do any sort of manual outdoor labour after dark, if you were out after dark, you must have been up to something criminal.
Yes, this seems like a curiously stupid decision from the normally quite intelligent Japanese culture. There you go. I said I might throw in a bit of racism. That was a bit of anti-racism.
I think if I was in power, I might bring this back in.
What?
Yes. I'd not be quite as draconian as sunset, because as you say, maybe in the winter. But what I would like to bring in is a curfew, where I think after, say, 11, everyone has to be inside and there can't be any noise else. Because where I live, Ben, it seems extraordinary to me that my street does tend to come to life at night. And people seem to do things. My neighbours recently moved out. Lovely neighbours. Lovely people. Never had a problem with them. They lived there years. Always got on with them. But they used to do a lot of things at night. There was always noise at night. And even when they were moving, I could hear them sort of overnight moving. And I think, why are you doing it overnight? And there's always something going on in my street at night. If I wake up, there's always noise outside. And I sort of think, I get annoyed with the noise during the day. I just feel at night there should be at least quiet. And if you are having to do something at night, have some thoughts about your neighbours. I've got another neighbour who's always moving stuff about at night. What are you doing?
Moving house at night does kind of make sense. The roads will be quieter. You won't have rush hour traffic. Although the vision for loading the lorry might be a problem. But I can kind of see the sense in moving house at night.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've done a lot of them because, I think I'd seen the van during the day. So maybe it was just all the last minute stuff. But I just thought, it's a bit weird. It's like, because I used to hear them a lot late at night doing something. Like occasionally, I'm not having a go because he was a lovely bloke, right? But occasionally he'd be doing drilling at sort of midnight.
Oh, that's unacceptable.
And I just sort of feel like have a curfew, so I wouldn't be as strict as perhaps the ancient Japanese, but I think I could bring something in about quietness at night. I think there's no need to be out after 11 these days, right? The pubs are too expensive, right? So to be out past 11, you've either got way too much money because the pub... In the old days, when I was younger, Ben, I used to get annoyed at closing time. I think, why can't I be out later? But these days, if I've gone out and bought a round, I'm skint. I've got to come home. It's ridiculous.
So what do night shift workers do?
Well, you ban all that. You wouldn't have night shifts anymore.
We'll just close the hospitals.
Everything would be done during the day. Yeah.
If you're going to have some kind of medical emergency during the night, you're fucked. Good luck.
I might make medical stuff exempt.
Okay, so...
Emergency services. I mean, it'd be bad not to have the fire brigade allowed to move at night. I accept that. Because if I was to have a fire in the house and phoned up the fire brigade in the middle of the night and said, well, we'd be round after daylight, you know, it'd be a bit late, really, by now. I'll keep the fire at bay till then.
I'd like to ask you this then, Mr. Smith. At what point is your overnight fireman supposed to do his drilling?
What do you mean?
Well, if he's working a night shift...
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've contradicted my own point.
Yeah,
because
you do it during the day, then. Ridiculous point.
Yeah. I realised immediately how stupid that was. But people need to work night shifts, and they might need to do things at slightly unconventional hours.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, as I say, emergency service personnel can be exempt. But there's no need for drilling at night.
You say they're exempt, are you going to go and check?
They can work at night, is what I'm saying. But there's no need to be drilling at night. There's no need to be moving boxes around in my street late at night. There's no need for it.
Imagine you at sort of 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
Hello. Yes, I've heard a drill. Can I see your warrant card, please?
Yes, I would have warrant cards. I would have cards that have to be like the Japanese had. You'd have to have some sort of pass that would allow you to be exempt. But I think drilling is a no-no. Who's going to be drilling? There's no need to be drilling past... I mean, I'd be fairly lenient. I'd say even up to maybe 11 o'clock, but I think even that's pushing it. I think 9 o'clock's the cut-off point for anything excessive. I mean, how do you feel about people using lawnmowers? Do you think there should be a time when people can start that? Because in the summer, some people get out and do that early, don't they?
I'm very sympathetic to this because my dad used to have his own gardening business. Mm. And he would, now and again, from probably... the local hungover community get the odd complaint from, you've woken me up, it's far too early to be using a lawnmower. And it was about 8 a.m. in the morning, which I think is fair game.
I think after 8, because isn't there the thing like roadworks and all that sort of stuff can't really start till 8?
Yeah.
Like I say, within normal waking hours for most people, not a problem. But I would bring in noise abatement rules and curfews when I'm in charge. Just a warning, you know, when I'm eventually on the ballot for election of global president.
South Korea, yeah. I think they're overthrowing the latest one, so you might have a job there.
Okay. Now, talking of things that weren't allowed after dark, especially, but actually this wasn't liked at all during medieval times, whistling.
Yes, I can understand that.
It was a belief that spirits could be summoned through whistling. As I say, this was medieval Europe, Britain and France in particular. So that whole thing of whistling might summon some sort of evil spirits.
Well, I remember you were famously warned by a very Christian lady, if memory serves, that your out-of-tune clapping might summon the devil.
Out-of-time clapping might summon the devil. I mean, I know a lot of people who have absolutely no sense of rhythm at all, and I hear them sing, clap, completely out of time, and not once have I seen any devil appear. I've not seen any evidence of evil spirits being summoned by the lack of timing.
But whistling is a particularly annoying thing. You were just talking about drilling. Whistling and drilling, I think, are two things which will particularly annoy everyone except the person doing it.
Yes. Yeah. The thing about whistling is, I mean, I get annoyed at myself whistling after a while. So what are you doing? You know, occasionally if you're washing up or something and you just find yourself whistling, it's almost subconscious. And then suddenly you hear yourself, you think, just shut up.
This does sound a bit like a psychological condition. I'm aware that I can be an intensely annoying person to be around, but to get to the point where I'm annoying myself and having to tell myself to shut the fuck up, that might be a condition. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I do. Sometimes I find myself singing a song, and it might be just because, you see, in some of my work, Ben, I have to deal with a lot of hymn singing, right?
Yeah.
And so hymns get in my head, and I'll often sit there and find myself singing a hymn, and I'll be midway through the first verse. And it's going, what were you doing? Why are you singing that? What are you singing that out loud for?
Why are you so bothered? You're obviously singing it to sort of soothe yourself. Why would it suddenly annoy you that you're having a lovely sing song?
Well, because why aren't I singing, I don't know, like something else?
What would you catch yourself singing and think, oh, actually, that's acceptable. That's perfectly fine.
Well, like when I do find myself singing a lot, as you know, Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World, that's fine, right? And when I realise I'm singing that, then I'll really go for it. I'll put on the Louis Armstrong voice. Or, I mean, I'm not going to do it now because maybe this.
I had mentioned racism earlier, hadn't I?
Well, this could tick the box because sometimes I will sing that song, but I'll do it in different accents.
Why?
Just for fun. Just for fun, I might.
Whose fun?
My own. I live on my own. Sometimes you've got to amuse yourself.
Now, I do. I'm not going to ask you to do it because I wouldn't put you on the spot like that. But I do know that you do quite a good, if not slightly racist, South African accent.
Mm, yes.
And I think that's one of the ones that can just about slip under the radar of still, yeah, okay.
The line is very faint, though, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, I think there are some people that just think you can't do any accents, really. It's probably inappropriate. But yeah, no, I could, you know, I might go, I see trees of green, red rises too, I see them blue, for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I might do that.
I wasn't going to ask you to do it.
But you're glad I did, aren't you?
That's,
you're glad
magnificent.
I
love that. And I think even the South African people would think that was a glowing tribute.
I don't know, because I once did that accent to a South African and it didn't go down well.
No?
I just don't think this person appreciated me doing anything like their own accent. So,
fair enough.
The other thing with whistling that they didn't like in medieval times, by the way, and maybe this is something you might want to think about with your latest crime problem, because criminals use whistling as a secret code to plot crime. So maybe up north, they're all whistling to each other when they're in Sainsbury's.
And the norther you get, the worse the whistling becomes. How do they do this? Like Morse code or something? How do you use whistling crime?
Presumably they would have had a code. Yeah, they would have had three whistles for cop around the corner.
Oh, okay. Like little warning signs.
Yeah, but I would imagine so. Do you know the one thing I've never been able to do is do that whistle when you put your fingers in your mouth.
Oh, I can do that.
Can you do that? Because, I mean, it's the most annoying whistle. I think that's more annoying than the sort of just whistling a tune, because that's a whistle that's louder. And people that do that sort of whistle tend to be those look at me types.
Well, yes. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend. I have a bit of an ego, so I am a bit of a look at me type. Mm. And I can do the double fingers, left and right hand in the mouth, and I can whistle at a volume you'd never heard before.
Right.
However, I haven't reached football manager level of whistle, where there are some football managers, probably of lower league championship teams, who can join their thumb and their index finger in a circle, insert it into their mouth, and they can generate a very good whistle. Yeah. And then there is the Premier League manager who can whistle at the volume I can, without even putting the fingers in the mouth.
I know.
It's a thing of majesty.
Yeah.
I wish I knew how to do it.
It's like I've never been able to do the, you know, when you clasp your hands together and you put your two thumbs together and you can do the owl noise.
Never been able to do that.
I'd love to be able to do that. Occasionally you get near it, just because you get, presumably that has to, the positioning of the mouth and the thumbs has to be just right. So occasionally when you're practicing, you might get one. You think, oh, that's it, and then never again. It's a bit like me doing the, you know, when I try and practice. I was listening to an interview this week with Rory Bremner. And I've always admired people that can do impressions, because I'd love to do impressions. And as I've proven so many times on the podcast, I cannot do any. But it doesn't stop me practicing. And I'm still practicing on Trump. And I can't get anywhere near it. But occasionally you might get one word. And you think, oh, have I cracked it? And then it's gone again. You know, yeah. It's one word and that's it. It's so annoying. What I've been trying to do, Roy Bremner said, you've got to almost inhabit the person, almost like you feel like them. And so I've been practicing with the Trump, and I've noticed with him, his mouth is generally kind of in that O position. You know, his mouth's always like in that O space.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? And you sort of think,
No, Trev, terrible, terrible.
Well, you know, I'm still working on it.
You've got a lot of work to do.
I've got 4 years to get it right, haven't I? I wish I'd spent more time on it first time round now.
You missed the first term.
I know. I could have really worked my way up. Like, I could have had work for the next 4 years. But instead, I didn't bother, did I? Laziness took over. I thought, well, he's not going to be president again. I won't try anymore. I didn't try.
Well, Biden. In that case, how's your Kamala Harris impression? How's your Joe Biden impression going?
Well, I didn't bother with them. I didn't.
But they were going to be president, according to your logic.
Yeah, but they weren't. I mean, Biden, you know, I could just do some generic old man voice.
Well, I think that was what you were doing with Trump. That was your generic old man voice.
But he is an old man. He is a crazy old man. So with the whistling thing, you know, that's what I try with the owl thing and the fingers in the mouth. I've never been able to do that. So,
although as far as a crime goes, if you were to nail the owl impression late at night,
yes,
no one would rumble you for noise pollution.
The problem with that, though, is if you were doing it out, let's say you were trying to communicate to your fellow criminal, trying to signal, like, he might be at the back of the house, you're at the front. What if you do the owl noise and then a proper owl responds? It would be a lot of confusion. The crime may not go down as well. You know, from the criminal's perspective, the owl noise may not be the best option.
No, I agree. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. You might just attract a local owl. Well, what's the collective noun for a load of owls?
Oh, is it a college?
Oh, it's something like that. Is it a parliament?
A parliament. It's a parliament of owls, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, so you might accidentally summon a parliament.
Which would be like summoning demons. Okay, here's another one. Wearing purple.
Why? Just straight, it's the first thing that came to my head. Why?
Well, purple traditionally was the colour of royalty, because purple dyes were really expensive, so only the wealthiest could afford them. But then as people worked out how you could maybe dye things purple more cheaply, the toffs got the hump. Right? You're like, well, no, we can't have the peasants wearing purple.
Not the plebs with purple, no.
So they banned it. They banned the peasantry from wearing purple.
But hang on, that's hard to police. How do you establish the person wearing purple isn't upper class gentry,
yeah,
and not just some pleb?
But this is
how do you,
again, this is medieval England, and think about where people would be living and dwelling, going about their daily life. That, you know, the posh people would have been in their manors, their mansions, the castles, all that sort of thing. And then there'd be the little villages, the little shacks where all the peasants were, wouldn't they? So,
but that begs its own question, which would be that if it was that easily discernible, why would they be worried? Because you'd think, oh, well, if we see someone in a castle wearing purple, that's obviously royalty. Mm. If we see someone on some council estate wearing purple, that's obviously a pleb. So why were they worried?
Well, because that's what toffs do. Toffs don't want you to have anything that they've got. It's still the case today, isn't it? You know, that's all the toffs don't want you as the plebs to have what they've got. They
suppression.
Want it all. Exactly. It's about power. it's about authority over you. And that's why we have to rise up, Ben. That's why we can't have the toffs in charge. And they still are, of course. But you've got to fight it.
Yes. All right. So we'll all don our purple blazers and sit up late at night honking like owls or geese or whatever the fuck we're doing.
Bathing was once illegal.
Illegal to wash yourself?
Mm.
Why?
Well, again, this is going back to the time after the Black Death, Ben, where you'd have thought maybe the unsanitary way that some people may have had to have lived their lives back then would have been a cause for the Black Death.
Yeah, you'd have thought it would be illegal to not bathe after the thing called the Black Death.
But the authorities of the time, particularly the church, Ben, again, the church coming in with some bollocks here.
The church, steady.
The church blamed excessive bathing for causing the plague epidemic. According to their view.
I have to alert you that yeah. We're probably reaching our quota of bashing certain institutions.
I'm just telling you what it says here, Ben. It was the church. According to them, bathing opened the pores, which allowed the disease and sinful corruption to enter the body. I mean, how does sinful corruption enter the body? The plague may be, like, you, I could see there even being a medical backing to that theory that, oh, you've opened up the pores, you know, the plague could get in. But sinful corruption?
Yes, that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, I could understand it as good advice against blackheads. Like, if you open up the pores on your skin on your face and don't use cold water to then close the pores and then dirt gets in, you might get blackheads. Mm. But sinful corruption,
whistling in the bath or shower and you summon a demon, it could enter the pores. This is where it all comes together, isn't it?
It all comes full circle.
That's why whistling in the shower is wrong. People, don't do it.
Trev, I did something silly.
Did you whistle in the shower?
I didn't whistle in the shower. I'm not that negligent.
What did you do?
A friend of mine, who I only get to see a few times a year, we arranged to meet, and we would normally go for a big piss up in a pub somewhere in London.
Okay.
But it's December. I don't get that much time off work in December. It's all a bit of a faff. So we decided, you know what? We'll go to Costco.
Go to Costco. Oh, what a day out.
It really was.
What a way to spend the day.
I'll stock up on my toilet roll.
Yeah.
I'll get some chicken wings. It'll be a lovely day out.
Are there any loyalty points stolen from Costco, or is that all right there?
I don't think Costco have a loyalty-based system, which might be something for them to look into.
Do you? Is that one of those shops you've got to be a member of? Is it one of those?
Yes, you do. It's about £33 a year, so you've got to go there quite frequently to make the bargains worthwhile.
Okay, so you make it a day out. Why not? A day out with friends. I've never been invited to Costco with you. I begin to feel left out now. You never phone me up and go, Trev, do you fancy a day out in Costco?
I'll take you to Costco if you want. Yeah. You can bring a guest. They're quite welcoming at Costco. Oh.
Is there a dress code?
No. If they let me in, mate, you're fine. But Costco have quite...
Again, sorry to interrupt, but this obsession of supermarkets and shopping emporiums is continuing, yeah.
I hadn't even noticed I was doing it. It's getting to a really bad habit.
I think you need some sort of therapy. Have you got some... Is this comfort shopping? What do they call it? Therapy shopping, whatever this is? Are you, is there something deeper going on here, Ben?
I think there might be, because I honestly hadn't realised I would again be talking about my supermarket experiences.
It's extraordinary. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
However, at the end of the shop, once you get past the tills, they have a little food court.
Right.
And I don't know if you know this, but Costco are quite famous for their very cheap hot dog, the £1.50 hot dog, and a free drink.
Oh, that's just, unlimited refills, isn't it? That's just arseholes congealed together.
But the famous rule, Trev, is no one asks how the hot dogs are.
Yeah,
no,
I'm not going anywhere near a cheap hot dog. Sorry.
But my mate, he wanted to make a bit of an occasion of our meetup, because normally we'd go to London, paint the town red, get absolutely shit-faced, and then regret all the decisions the next day. But we can't do that, because obviously we're driving home. Yeah. So the next best thing, he thought, was why don't we try a sort of food challenge?
Okay.
So he said, I suggest, as a food challenge, we do the Costco chicken bake, followed by the Costco hot dog, followed by the Costco slice of pizza.
Okay.
Now, as you know, Costco is a big American conglomerate.
Right.
And as is their food. It's big American food. Nothing is small sized.
Okay.
So for no reason, no discernible reason other than male ego and pride, we stuffed ourselves full of this food just to say we'd done it.
Okay. Did you set yourself a time limit to eat the food in? Because, you know, like, I see these things a lot on social media, these sort of restaurants or cafes that offer, like, big eating challenges where you've got to eat all this stuff in an hour and you get a T-shirt. So it's, what is the point of stuffing yourself ill for a T-shirt?
Well, I can honestly defend that. One of my favorite YouTubers is a guy called Beard Meets Food, who does food challenges all over the world, and he will often do it for a free T-shirt or a $10 gift card or something. And I don't know why it's so hypnotic to watch, but it really is. As you were talking about time limits, quite frustratingly to me, I started off at a great pace. I was well ahead.
Oh, is that a mistake, though, to start fast?
Well, I thought I had to try and trick my stomach into not knowing what was happening to it until the food was inside.
Okay.
But as it turned out, my mate, he finished his last bite about 30 seconds before I finished my last bite. Wow. And then he declared himself the winner. Mm. And I took umbrage to this because I thought, we never said it was a timed thing. We never said it was a race. It was a challenge to eat the food. It wasn't a challenge to win, because otherwise I'd have upped my game. Anyway, that was a side argument. But honestly, for the rest of the day, we both went home. I think he had a snooze for the afternoon.
Of course.
I went home and just felt like shit. And honestly, the male ego ran away with itself to the point of, for no real reason. It was supposed to be two buddies getting together at the end of the year to say Merry Christmas, have a hug, do a bit of Christmas shopping at Costco. But we turned it into this male pride-ridden ego fest, and it ruined my day.
I think you've got to grow out of that. I think you do get to a point in life where those things stop. I've never really done too many of those things. Like, you know, like some people get into chili eating contests and it gets hotter. And what is the point of that? I mean, it's unpleasant. Like, there's no joy coming out of that particular contest, is there?
No, but that's, maybe you're right. Maybe I need to grow out of it. But there is something within my core, and obviously within my friend's core, which is, if another man comes to you and says, I bet you can't eat X, Y, and Z, you will say, game on.
Yeah, no, I think there comes a point where if anyone offers you a challenge, there comes a point in life where you say no. For me, it used to be downing pints in one.
I'm not sure I could do that ever.
I used to be able to do that so easily. And not just like one. I mean, you get to a point where you can't do it, but I could probably do three pints all in one. You know, so people would sort of go, oh, come on, Trev, do another one, down in one, I'll do it, right? That would be my thing. But there comes a point where you can't do that anymore. And if someone offered that challenge to me now, I'd say, well, no, I couldn't do it now.
But is that because the will has gone or the ability has gone?
I think physically I couldn't do it now.
Well, that's different. That's different. Because if I challenge your ego and I say, eat this, drink that, I don't care about the speed. You can take as long as you need, but just consume it, do it, and I'm challenging your masculinity.
No, because I think...
I'm so pathetic that I will have to try my best.
No, because I think the will does go as well. Because you get to a point in life, you think, I don't need to prove myself doing that. I mean, it's a bit like... a different thing entirely, but when I used to go to the pub with my mates, and you'd come along sometimes, and there'd be a pool table, right?
Oh, yeah.
And in the first few years that I went to this pub with my friends, I'd start playing pool. But I'm no good at pool. It's a pointless game to me, but there you go.
I take great offence to that, because I have invested many hours in playing pool. I know, I'm quite good at it.
You enjoy it, and that's fine. Like people took it very seriously in a pub. And to start with, my ego would be bruised because I was really bad at it. And then I just thought, why? I don't need to play this game. Like, you know, it's ridiculous me even taking up a challenge. Someone said, do you want a game? No. I don't want to play a game of pool. So it doesn't bother me anymore. But it did. Like, there was a time I'd always go, of course I'll play.
Because everyone else. Sorry to interrupt. Is this the same pub which I might have seen security footage from of someone playing pool who rubbed someone up the wrong way so he smashed the queue over his head?
Yes, when he was that pub, yes.
Yes. So I would take it quite seriously in there as well.
Well, that's what I mean. I did play one bloke in there once, and he said to me, you're a fucking nightmare. I said, why?
I agree. I know exactly why you're a nightmare to play. I can tell you right now.
Go on. What did you think then?
Because most people, when playing a game of pool or chess or any sort of game, good players usually strategize, form their next move. You are the sort of untalented bastard who will come to the table and rearrange everything. Yes. So the whole game plan goes out the window with every single shot you take.
But why is that my problem? That's your problem. Deal with it. Deal with it. You know, play the opponent.
I mean, that would be a hell of a nickname. Trev the Nightmare Smith.
Can we get that bloke? You know that really old bloke who does the snooker... What's the word? Like the emceeing at the snooker.
Oh, yes.
He's been doing some recently. Is it the world... I don't know what's been taking place recently. There's some, but there were some clips the other day of it, and really going for it. And it's not like the darts. Like at the darts, it's still cringy, but it sort of works at the darts, but it doesn't work at the snooker. And I'm sorry, that guy who seems a really nice bloke, and he does all the interviews after the snooker, and he seems a really nice... But he's not the man to do it. Do you know what I mean?
But the reason it works at the darts is because everyone's pissed out of their fucking heads and they don't give a shit.
Well, exactly. So it doesn't sit well with the snooker, does it? I think there are certain sports where you just think, let's not do that. Let's just do a very quick, ladies and gentlemen, it's Steve Davis. Not this sort of, here's the beast from, it doesn't work. Whatever they do, it's weird. Because either that or you've got to let the crowd get boozed up at the snooker, and they're not going to allow that.
Also, the nicknames in the snooker are a bit shit as well. I think it's John Higgins who's got the nickname The Wizard of Wishaw. And that's not a catchy nickname.
It's not.
I'm sorry.
No. It doesn't give any sort of, like, being a wizard, that might be all right. But then what is it? Wishaw? I don't even know what that is.
Wizard of Wishaw, I think.
Wishaw?
Yeah. I mean, just be
the wizard.
Yeah.
Like, don't put the place name that nobody knows and sounds like some weird shire out of Lord of the Rings. Just be the wizard.
I mean, Ronnie the Rocket O'Sullivan, that's quite good. Yeah, but the Wizard of Wishaw is kind of shit.
Just stop it. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations. What have you got for us this week, Ben?
I've got a great Netflix documentary. It's a bit bleak, but it's called Cold Case: Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey?
Oh no, I've seen this. This is turning into one of those quite big crime documentaries. It's been talked about a lot, this, hasn't it? I've not watched it yet.
It's a very famous case, currently I think unsolved. And it's about 3 1-hour-ish episodes, and it's not an easy watch. I'll be straight up about that, but it's definitely interesting. And if you're a fan of true crime, it's a good one.
Okay, all right. Well, I will get to that because I know a couple of people have mentioned this to me as well. So I think it's one to it's one of those to watch. I've got a couple of things for you, both dramas this week. This is on Netflix, a drama called Black Doves. It's got Keira Knightley in. It's got Ben Whishaw in. The Wizard of Whishaw. And Sarah Lancashire is in it. It's a story of... It's about spies, basically, Ben. It's all about intrigue and spies. When a politician's wife and an undercover spy learn that her lover has been murdered, the Black Doves recruit an old friend to help protect her. The Black Doves are basically a group of spies.
Ah, okay.
It's a good yarn. If you like spy stories, it's a good yarn.
Okay. I haven't heard the word yarn for a while.
It's a great word, that, isn't it?
It's lovely.
I might use that way more often. And the other thing I'm going to recommend, I've come a little bit late to this. It's on Sky at the moment, The Day of the Jackal. Now, interestingly enough, I was talking to someone about this the other day, and their response was, oh, why have they remade that? The film was so good. I've never seen the original film, but the series is it's updated. It's put in the modern time. I've watched a bit of a documentary about the series. They tried to be respectful, and there's lots of nods to the original film. But it is brilliant. It's 10 episodes. It's got Eddie Redmayne in it, who is brilliant. And I think Eddie Redmayne should be very much a shoo-in for the next James Bond.
Really?
I just think watching this and the way he performs and the sort of character traits that would be needed, I think he would make a brilliant Bond. But I thought The Day of the Jackal, it is superb. I think really well worth watching.
My dad got in touch with me recently and he said, you must recommend on your podcast this thing called, and I think he just called it Jackal. And I'm assuming it's the same thing. But
I imagine so.
Unless he got the title slightly wrong. He did say it was based on The Day of the Jackal. So,
It'll be the same thing. Yeah, yeah.
And it's not called Jackal, it's called The Day of the Jackal?
It's called The Day of the Jackal. I mean, in the logo for the programme, the word jackal is very big, but it's got the day of in quite small writing.
There'll be the confusion. Okay, that's fine.
But no, highly recommend it. I binged it all in 2 days.
10 episodes? How much time do you have in your hands? Don't you work anymore?
It's a lot of late nights. A lot of sleepless nights to get through.
That's because of all that drilling.
So anyway, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. Right, Trevor Bennett next. Next week will be the Christmas podcast.
Hey!
The Christmas edition. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Something to look forward
to. Is that your
to.
Trump again?
Yeah. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.